to How I Got Through It. We are so excited to be here with you in 2022. In our episode today, we are interviewing Ronnie Madra. Ronnie is known for being the co-founder of One Oak, the founder of Eros, and his new company, Savor. In this episode, we touch on how you cope with isolation and how also becoming the scientist of yourself can really launch you into the next chapter of your life. One quick disclaimer. We recorded this episode virtually while I was on vacation in Barbados, so you may need to grab your headphones for this episode. Let's get started. Here is my interview with Ronnie Madra. Let's start the story in March of 2020. That is when the New York lockdowns went into full effect. And I can only imagine for the co-founder of One Oak, your business is built on interacting with people, right? Going to all the events, hosting events, being a socialite also in New York. So what did that feel like when you were told, okay, now we have to isolate. Your world as you know it is going to pause for an indefinite amount of time. What was kind of going through your head at the time?
You know, for many people, including myself, in the world of, let's call it nightlife and hospitality, you know, that's been our lives, our bread and butter for a very, very long time. And I think that you go through every day with just one mission. It's a revolving door of business and people and travel and movement and constant service. And just to have that all abruptly stop kind of forces one to really think about one's life and gives you a bit more perspective. When I'm seeing people for the first time or interacting with them recently, I think the conversation always steers in the direction of, okay, how did you deal with it? How did you end up starting another company and building it and raising money during a time when people weren't seeing each other at meeting. But I think people go through it differently, right? And as the virus is very erratic and it unpredictable, and I think that's how a lot of people either fell into a place of paralysis. There was no movement either forward, backwards, up or down. It was just there. And I think there are other people that really went down the wrong path, and I think most likely to their own personal and mental detriment, didn't do the right things in the beginning and didn't surround themselves with the right people to really anchor them or help them or was there for support.
So that leads me to ask, who was there for you? How do you stay grounded? How did you come to like sort of this different path, I would say? What grounds you, I guess, is the first good question.
I just simply went through it. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go through this and I'm going to take what comes. I'm going to, you know, sit in my flat by myself and I'm going to identify who those people I'm going to see the most and who I want to isolate with. I mean, it was my family first, and a couple of my closest friends were here. And my goddaughters were, they really kept me light because they, although they know what's going on, they don't really know. And so every day is like, oh, we get to spend time with mommy and daddy and Uncle Ronnie, you know. And so being around my mom and dad, also having more home cooked meals and spending 2-3 days, I spent a lot of time with them. You know, obviously, that's not what a grown man really wants to do, spend a lot of time with his family necessarily. But it kind of that anchored me. And then also I kind of wanted to know more about my past and how being Guyanese and how did we end up there, and what was the process and what were all the intricacies of that part of the world, what was going on with Indians and Africans and Chinese, and just really diving into so many things and let my creative juices start to flow again and give myself the time to breathe and to focus on things that really matter.
So as you're going through this phase in your life, you're in isolation, you're at home, you're reading books, you're trying to let your creative juices flow again. Did you ever get depressed just being alone in that space? And then if you did, how were you able to pull yourself out of that?
The biggest thing, actually, which I would be wrong if I didn't say this, is my sister Lisa. because she's a very, you know, my sister, Lisa, and people who know me know that she's like, she's the world to me. And she basically, I called her right before all these like extracurricular activities and rooms and reading. I was literally in, I think it was like towards like March 18, right after my mother's birthday. We came back here. I came back here by myself and I'm like, okay, Groundhog Day. Okay. I am now going to crack open a bottle of wine, you know, because I never really drank at home. I always drank out socially. Make a steak, turn on the telly and watch something. And then just think about what's not happening versus what could happen. And I called her completely depressed. And I don't get depressed. You know, I don't get down. And I always feel I'm an optimist. You know, it's been my constant, I think, way of thinking. And this time my optimism was really shot. And I called her up and I said, this sucks. I don't know. She's like, as my sister in her fashion, she goes, what are you talking about? You have so much to be grateful for. You just complain about the steak you just made and the great bottle of wine you just drank in your home. I'm here. You have your niece and nephew, you have mom and dad. You have all these incredible things that you've done. And putting things in perspective was, it's not easy to do when you can't see 10 feet or feet in front of you, mentally and emotionally. So she really said, you're being stupid. And then she started making me laugh. How silly. I mean, how, you know, we always think about the things that are not happening and what we don't have. And I start channeling what was going on in the world and people losing their families and
their jobs and
jobs
and everything.
Homeless. So it really said, okay, Ronnie, you have a home. You have, I looked at my bookshelf in the living room. And I go, oh, and you have a lot of books to read.
Yeah.
Read them in comfort of your own home to do that. And I think once I start reading and talking to really people that know me and understand me and can tell me the truth without me resisting it, I think my life became a lot more meaningful.
I so resonate with that because when the lockdowns first started, it felt to me like just a time of isolation in my small studio apartment at the time. I couldn't wait to be back out there and be social. But then I changed my perspective and that became a very sacred time for me. It became a time where I took stock of my life and things surfaced for me, changes that I've always wanted to make, habits that I've always wanted to implement, people that I've always wanted to cut out of my life. So I have to ask you, did anything like that surface for you? Did any changes that you've always wanted to make come up?
I don't really feel that being in the nightlife business was conducive to a very healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It had many perks and many benefits, and it brought much, I would say, incredible experiences to my life and benefits. It's been a great platform. I was already thinking of stepping into other things and not an abrupt departure, but a phasing out of it.
Right.
With no, it's like the mafia. You don't just, I mean, it's, and if you try to leave, they drag you back in. Right. And so, I was very fortunate again to be able to put that in perspective. Look at what we've built with Eros and look at One Oak and Up and Down and Eros and what these companies were, what my part in them, what role I played and say, okay, here you go. Now it's time to figure out what to do next. And so the process in my head was really about trying not to lose sight of what I want for my life. And I think the loneliness was like, okay, you've had many opportunities and you squandered them because you either weren't in the right place for it or you weren't receptive or kind of open to it. I mean, and you kind of blocked everything off. And I kind of shut off a lot of things like relationships. It would just bog me down where it has in the past because I allowed it to happen and I invited that type of energy into my life based on my occupation, or I became the thing that I didn't really like much, where I didn't like that about certain people or in relationships or in women. And then boom, I became what women don't like in men, you know, or certain things I don't like in myself. I don't like in other people. So it became like, all right, you need to figure out where you want to be on this journey. And so prior to the pandemic, I really took a step back from a lot of things that were unhealthy for my mental health, emotional health, physical health, and worked on really rebuilding Ronnie, reconstructing him in a way that was meaningful from the new chapter of my life. Whatever that was during the pandemic, I had no idea, but I knew that I couldn't go down to dark places as I wanted to, as I could have, and accessibility to it. Kept it together. Thank God for family and friends, like close people I care about.
I'm so happy to hear you talk about fighting against the seduction of sadness, actually, because listen, it is easy when your life, as you know, it was stripped away from you. There's a pandemic happening outside of your door to fall into that woe is me narrative in your head. But hearing you talk about appreciating what you have, a roof over your head, friends and family that care about you, even if you can't physically interact with them, I think is incredible. And I want to take it a step further and talk about another parallel emotion to sadness, which is grief. Knowing that you put a lot of your sweat and hard work into building One Oak, which is an internationally known company, a lot of who you are must be rooted in that company. When you go to an event, you represent your brand. So thinking about walking away from something that took you a good portion of your life to build, I can imagine may bring about some kind of grief, some kind of sadness. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I wouldn't say grief. I think it's just, I definitely learned and made a lot of mistakes and learned a lot through those mistakes. Being on the job, as they say, and being present in that environment really showed me how people are in and around that business, and the cutthroatness, the hustle, the grind, just also the revolving door of it is just really, I always say revolving door because that's what it was. You're just there, you're spinning and you're spinning people at the same time, and you're spinning around. It's like a constant movement that is not, you're just dizzy. For the most part, very off balance. I just don't. It's a tough thing to say because I knew there were a lot of structural and cultural issues with the business I was in, and what I wanted to do in my new life, in my new chapter, more grown up, Ronnie, was to build something that had more structure, and I was more in control of its destiny, and I was more in control of its success, and the failure would be my fault, and I couldn't say, hey, someone did that and then pass the buck. So I felt that the One Oak and the club nightlife hospitality business, it didn't really grow up for me. It stayed exactly the way it is and it'll remain that way. I think what we always talked about, my business partners and I, were, hey, guys like Ian Schrager had nightclubs, but then they grew up and then they opened hotels and then they became creators and curators of real amazing experiences globally. And this was not just about nightlife anymore. This is about hospitality. My plan was to keep the nightlife business going as long as possible because it was very lucrative. But then obviously not being happy and just making money is not enough. I wanted to have my cake and eat it at the same time. Doing two jobs for the last 5 years, day and night, really takes a toll on your psyche because you don't really have time for your personal life necessarily.
And I think also, you know, I've always felt this from you and felt this about you, but you're a person that has a good heart, a good, genuine heart. So when you put someone with that kind of heart in an environment where you have to spin people and it's a revolving door and you may have to do things you don't necessarily want to do, or, you know, one day you wake up and you're like, I don't really like the person I'm becoming, then that really takes a toll on your psyche. And then something like that, coupled with the pandemic happening, I can only help but think that your life is now happening for you instead of to you. I think that previously, maybe with One Oak and being in some situations and scenarios, your life was happening to you. And then the pandemic happened, everything paused, and your life is now happening for you. So in retrospect, what do you wish that you knew then that you know now?
Oh, I have a long list. I think that when you're growing up and you're trying to call it fit in and to adapt and to I think basically you want to ingest everything. You're ravenous. You're going into, you're constantly expanding on meeting people and doing things and being everywhere. And there's at times no rhyme or reason to it. Looking back on those times and what I've been doing the last 5 years was slowly consolidating all these things and really editing out what doesn't serve me. And I say that very selfishly. If it doesn't serve me, I'm not doing it.
Can I stop for a second? And what does serving you, can you explain what that means?
Serve me meaning what will better Ronnie, make him a better person, make him grow as a businessman, make him more spiritual, lift him up, inspire him. Those are the things that I think, and when you're constantly trying to fit into every environment or to adapt everywhere, you kind of lose a bit of yourself. And I think you chip away because you're always adjusting your behavior and emotions to really hurt people, right? To prove yourself constantly. And I never used being Indian or Guyanese or brown as a crutch. It was never something that I would ever do. And I've seen people do it, that it becomes like, okay, poor me. I was never that guy. I'm very bad at asking for help. Super. I'm never good at that. I'm not a good taker or take the right way. So I surrounded myself with amazing people. But on the flip side of that, I surrounded myself with really messed up people. Real, unhappy, predatory, fucked up people. Sorry to say that.
Yeah, no.
I played with them. I mean, everything. And that became obviously a reflection of who I am. And so once I had that wake-up call, I start editing. And I really edited. I started cutting off so many people, kept a lot of people at arm's length, polite, sometimes abrupt, sometimes really hardcore. So it was a mixed bag. So yeah, so I think that looking back and the perspective and what I could have done better is, I think it's always choose better people to be around you. That is the main thing in work, in business, in life, as partners, as confidants, as mentors. Choose them wisely and recognize people for where they're coming from, because usually they're there to take something. If you're not careful and you allow it, then they will take more. I've allowed that too. And I maybe at one point I was a bottomless pit of just doing. I felt that was it. That's all the role I had to play, and I played it really well. So, but I'm not going to play that game anymore, I think. And I know that it has made my life a lot better, much more meaningful. I think that's what sticks out. Obviously, there's a lot of little things that I can do, but I think that's the most powerful, I think, what I could have done then, that, you know, what I know now, what I could have done better back then.
Let's go a little bit deeper into what serves you. What are the things that serve you in business relationships and your personal relationships, spiritually? What are the things that you look for, indicators that you are being served as a person, as a personality? So, for example, professionally, one of my personal internal things are to be excellent in my job or career that I choose. If not, then it feels off. And over time, I feel unhappy. In my personal relationships, what I'm feeling on the inside should match what's happening on the outside, or else I feel like I'm not showing up authentically in that relationship. So have you thought about maybe what are the facets of your personality that need to be served?
I think knowing yourself, I think, is something that I really wanted to explore more, because I would ask myself, who are you? Do you really know yourself? Do you know where, when you really sit down and identify everything about you, which I think would be impossible for any human to do that. Sometimes we don't even know, or sometimes we just deny those things, right? We just stuff them somewhere that we don't have to deal with it. Yeah. So it kind of, you know, you're with yourself and you go through your hills and valleys of thinking that way. It's because I think I kind of had this forced stop and this acceleration of thinking about what does the future look for Ronnie? Does the future look for the people he cares about? What does it, or what is he doing again to rethink the way that I look at what's missing in, call it, in life, in terms of where there's need, where there is, where can I plug myself in now that's not going to hurt me? It's going to better me. It's going to challenge me. And I think that's when I started my other company, Savor. And it was all about collaboration. And I think that's what humanity, that's how we grow. That's how we thrive, when we collaborate, when we're together in a room and we're shooting ideas. But I was doing via Zoom and FaceTime and seeing those very carefully selected people that I can bounce my ideas off on. And they can bounce their ideas off me. And so, you know, so I think those are the little things that happen. And then, you know, your heart opens up. I think when your heart opens up, then your eyes open up and your intelligence become more than just intelligence, becomes more feeling. And once I think those things start to all communicate and gel together, because I compartmentalized everything. That was my gift, compartmentalization. And once I started having interdepartmental communication, it made me...
All the departments had a meeting.
Yeah, I had a meeting and it's like, okay, this is the goal. And they all work together. And I think that's the difference between a successful person or a successful business. It's not like every man for himself or every aspect of a person, personality that's running in different direction. They all have to somehow be cohesive, still be independent, but still work together. I brought a lot of those things together over the pandemic. I've never said it like that before. It's very enlightening conversation, Bhavna.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I also hear you talk about you became the scientist of yourself, right? Like, figured out what departments were there. You had them talk to each other. You figured out what was important, what you didn't like in the past, how you want to move your life forward, what your next chapter should look like to you. Was there a specific decision when you decided you wanted to create Savor? Was there something that triggered that thought, or was that always something that you wanted to phase into?
I think at our core, Guyanese people are very hospitable. They love to cook, they love to eat, they love to drink. Yeah. When people come to your home, if you're a Guyanese home, you're going to make sure they have a plate of food, sit at the best spot of the table, and they'll feed you till you can't eat anymore.
Right. And it's a lot of family hospitality, family get-togethers, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And coming from a big family and obviously always around family, I think the value has always been there. That's that value system. And I think having curated and hosted and produced so many dinners on all sizes and shapes with creed and people and personalities and characters, I think that Savor, to be honest, it was not really even my idea. It was one of my really two close friends of mine that I'm godfather to their daughters, Carl and Olga, called me up and said, because I was depressed and they knew it. And they're like, we have an idea for you, Ronnie. Idea. But it was no names. I was like, you should do the Uber for chefs. Or, yeah, imagine you can go on an app and you can. And I'm like, this is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I don't really like it. And I was very negative. I was like, oh, no. And they're like, both of them, let's go and have a talk about it. So we talked about it. I'm like, not convinced. And then I said, okay. And they're so passionate about it. I'm like, wow, this is really, you're trying to like throw me an idea. Like, I'm like, okay, I'll bring in two other people I trust to listen to the idea as well. And if they like it, okay, we'll give it a go. But I have nothing better to do. You know, this is like June of 2020, right? Like, who knows what's going on, right? Yeah. And so I called in two individuals I've worked with in the past that have a different perspective. And one is very risk adverse and one is very negative as well. So, but I've worked with them. So I know that they'll have a different opinion. And Carl and Olga was able to really change their way of thinking about it. And they were loving the idea. And I think because I even brought them to the idea and on the call, they wanted to be more receptive to it. So I was still not into it. And so we started talking about it and start shooting ideas. And I felt my creative juice flowing again. I'm like, you know, okay, why not? I would never tell my investors that. It was not just they'll probably hear this, but it's okay. They're cool. But as we start developing and getting into the whole nitty gritty of building a tech company, which really excited me because I always wanted to be in tech. I always aspired to be in tech. Building Eros was like my bridge into it, in a way, with a product, a hardware, a consumer package, a good that really had meaning and IP and design and all the things I loved. And I think Savor just became the technology that can be scaled really fast and really could be very lucrative when it really hits, not if it will, when.
Yeah.
And remaining optimistic during that time and raising funds and really enjoying the process was really helpful. And Favor is really about bringing people together. I think that was something that was missing from my current state of affairs. Couldn't bring people together. I kept getting phone calls from people saying, hey, where can I get a chef? Or where can I go have an underground dinner? Or who's doing stuff? And people still called me and I became their therapist or their information superhighway. For the lack of a better way, I had no idea what was going on. I said, you know, you have to constantly make things happen for people to give them an outlet or a platform to make. So let me backtrack. Being in the nightclub business and the restaurant business, it takes a lot of physical energy and time and hands-on to really make it successful. There's no, like, no matter what the playbook is, no matter what the funding or the amount of cushion you have to build a business, and as long as you can build it, it's not successful unless you can really put your physical self into it. And looking at where technology has gone and where it's grown and how businesses are being scaled, technology companies are being scaled, it's very fascinating to me to see how I can apply technology to hospitality. For me, there's so much heavy lifting that is so unnecessary that if we can crack that code, when we crack the code, to basically allow technology to be more integrated without compromising the analog experience, right? The real-time experience. Let technology handle all the processes and all the things that most creative people or hardworking people don't have the energy or the bandwidth to do. Let technology do that. So businesses like Savor did came about, but it's hard to really manage, and customer acquisition and behavior is very finicky when it comes to food and really dining. So, you know, why restaurants are successful, not because the restaurant is great or it's located in an amazing location or the chef is amazing. There's a whole network of people, a village of people that are there working towards building this thing into a successful product. And so we're looking to be the platform backend management system for dining experiences, but to evolve it more, you know, this is about experiences, right? It doesn't have to be just about food and wine. What's happening in a private dining experience? And I think the goal is to be an affordable luxury. And I think a lot more people are going to hit the idea, but that takes time. What comes first, the chicken or the egg, and eradicate that thinking and really a lot of hustle, a lot of madness.
There will be a lot of people listening to this episode that are thinking about pivoting and making a change in their career. What is your suggestion since you just went through this? Is it looking for the breadcrumbs of things that excite you? In your case, I heard you talk about tech companies have always excited you, and venturing into that was something that you always wanted to do. Do they look for those breadcrumbs along the way of what interests them or what they're curious about? Or how do you suggest people make a change in their career?
I think it's about looking at yourself first, understanding what makes you excited, what makes you motivated, what gets you out of bed, what you enjoy, and find a pathway to bring innovation and disruption to it. And this won't happen by you just sitting in the room contemplating it. I think that's part of it. But I think you also speak about your ideas, whether they will be well received or not, or you'll be dismissed for it. You got to like still do it. And you have to be vulnerable, I think, as well. Yeah. I think really opens up so many things, you know, when you're building walls to like gut missiles and barbed wire fence to push away people and you fake being open.
People sense that.
Yeah. Well, the right people sense that. And they also, I'm not going to waste my time.
Right.
I think that you'll go through some hard times. Like what I did, I told you a few weeks ago and a month ago, something like that there's a lot of highs and lows of startup world. And this is my third startup. Some of them are successful. Some of them scale. Some of them, they bring more ideas. I think that to focus on one thing only, I will never say do many things. And I would say if it wasn't for the pandemic, I would have never embarked on Safe. is to, there's a thoughtfulness and a consideration you have to have, not only for yourself and your time, but for people that you bring into your projects and to your, bring into the idea. Possibility when you're raising money, when you're hyping people up to come on board on this vision, this dream, you've got to, that's a responsibility that you have, and you have to really be true to them and to yourself. And I think it's, I've learned a lot because I've made a lot of mistakes. I always say that very openly. I think it's okay to make many mistakes, but that's how you learn many things. And so my advice to the young entrepreneur, whoever he or she or they are, is to don't do too many things, but identify what that one thing is that you can use those other aspirational things or those other things that you like to do to support that main idea. My hospitality experience and nightlife experience and curation experience and building a company from scratch by putting a team together and leading the charge on that really gave me a sense and understanding of what it takes and how hard it is to do something on that level, especially when you are doing it alone. You cannot, there's no one man show anywhere. Anyone that says me, myself, and I run away from that. I did not get to this point without a lot of people helping me. Mm-hmm. And you need help. You know, you have to identify who those right people are and where to extrapolate from them their talents as well to work with yours. That's the gist of it.
That's some good advice. What do you want people to know about Saver?
I want them to download the app. Okay. Important. I never thought I'd ever say that. Download my app. So the app that we created, basically, the technology is incredible. And all my tech investors always say, Ronnie, invest in technology. You already got people. How to bring these two things together? It's a challenge. So I would say that what we're doing is better than anything you could ever find from a social experience, because we're not just connecting you with like chefs and bartenders and servers. We're actually helping people get back to work in a way that makes sense for them on a creative level, on the entrepreneurial level. They make their own hours, they set their own schedule, and they set their prices. And they have more freedom to opt in and opt out whenever they want, right? So we're not saying, hey, you have to stay in this job and you'll be stuck in a kitchen. And hey, you don't have to go out to a restaurant every night of the week,
right?
Or you don't have to cook or do your own shopping. So what we're doing is, again, we want to make sure the hosts become the guests. Because when you're hosting people at your home, you're working, right? And you have to love it to do it, right? I love cooking and cleaning and setting the table and pouring the wine and serving the food and playing the music and playing the lights. But some people don't have the time for that and don't have the bandwidth. And some people don't have the means to do it, or they don't know that they can do it at an affordable level. So I would love this information to get out there. And we are recruiting chefs. We want more chefs that are come and bring their unique ingredients to every dining experience that they go. And by the way, I have not spent any resources or funds or money on PR marketing necessarily. In-house relationships, resources, and we have a pretty meaningful, steady business just on my database.
Yeah.
And friends' databases and friends recommending it and people using it. And so to really get that viral effect, we need to really understand what our roadmap is. So as a fun thing, it's just a cool thing to browse menus. I love looking at food. If you love food, and you want to have an idea of the person cooking your food and who they are, where they've cooked before, and the menu they've catered, designed for this platform, then go on. I think you will be very surprised on you can find your price point. And then what makes it really interesting, after once you ordered your chef and you've established the menu and your dietary needs, then our concierge will send you a DM on the app. And then also the chef will send you a DM as well saying, I am very happy to be cooking for you. How can I elevate this experience for you? How can I do more? What don't you like to eat? What do you like to eat? Do you want to substitute or take away? Or do you want to? So the menu that's already established on the app is just a reference point. You can adjust it anywhere you want.
When I think about how we started this interview and where you were in March of 2020, I bet you never thought that your life would turn out this way a year later. And I did want to transition and touch a bit on a very important personal relationship for you, and also might be fitting to say congratulations on being recently engaged. So can we talk a little bit about that if you're comfortable? I wanted to kind of find out from you, do you think that with all the self-investigation and really just becoming the scientist of yourself during the pandemic, that this relationship manifested because of that?
Yeah, thanks for highlighting that. So I think that when I brought my girlfriend, now my fiance, Tara, home to meet my parents and my sister, I think everyone knew that the jig was up. I think my parents, I think they said something towards the effect, it took a pandemic for you to slow down and meet a woman, or you were in a place where you were able to meet a woman that become your wife one day, which is very soon. I think that in the world of nightlife and in that world and traveling and moving around,
yeah,
you meet other transient people who also are most likely in the same situation as you. So long-lasting, meaningful relationship is not in the cards.
Right.
So that was a revolving door in itself. And my life became less about a revolving door, but more of a wonderful, beautiful elevator ride to something really glorious. When I got onto the lobby level, this person was there and she was right next to me and I was able to recognize her and she was able to recognize me. And I think, I hate to say the word, the universe. Many people have said that word to me and say, oh, the universe wanted you guys to meet. And I think sometimes we fight against the universe and we can't win. I know the universe will always win. And I think that only because I was in a better place mentally and emotionally, and I took time before the pandemic to reassess my life and evaluate what was going on and the way I was towards women and the way women were towards me, what I attracted, what I pushed away. And I've had amazing women in my life that I pushed away and treated really poorly. And I think that was part of the persona I created and the environment that I was in. And so once I started realizing my behavior and how wrong it was, and it didn't make me happy either way, being hurt or hurting others. If you're like one way on that, I'm sorry, you're hopeless. You have to understand and recognize what you give and what you get. Because I was already changing my behavior, my profession, and how the narrative of my life and what people say, well, what do you do or what you're about? My conversations became very different, right? Because I started understanding myself more. I was working on things that were more meaningful and more grown up. And I like to say grown up because it's when you're in a nightclub business, it's very hard to grow up because you're dealing with all sorts of age groups. You're babysitting, you're young people and wasted people, and you got to adjust yourself. Or if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah.
You end up joining them for the most part. And then you became that. Tara really brought calmness and a serenity to my life. And I saw things in her that I went for myself. Again, selfishly. I saw her calmness, her sincerity, because I always want to be more sincere. I think my mother always says, you know, she said that about my ex-girlfriend before Tara, my last year's girlfriend. She goes, you're not sincere, but that girl is. And we really liked her, but you're an asshole. My parents said, and I never took a girl home since then because I knew that I had a responsibility, not only to my heart, but to someone else's heart. So when I met Tara, she came from a very transparent and genuine place. And she's an adventurer like me, but she approaches her adventures very differently. And so do I. And so I think we're a great team. And I think that a person that takes care of you without any ego or any need for want or to be reciprocated anyway, it's inspiring. When I asked her to marry me, I always told her that I don't believe in marriage. Although I come from two parents who've been married for a very long time. But I saw also how hard it is, how hard marriages are. And I hate the word marriage. I hate the word fiance. I was like, this is my partner. I want to have a life with you. I want to have children with you. I want to be around you. And I'm so satisfied and happy. And I think that's enough. But I think when I put a little energy into getting a ring, I think it was, I realized that this is a promise and I want to show her the level of commitment that I had. And I think that is something that I always want to do, is always show her how committed I am to her and to us. So that's serving myself, actually. That's all I'm going to say on that.
And then last question, where do you hope Ronnie is 5 years from now? What do you hope he's doing? What he's building? Where he is? Does he have a family? Does he not?
On a personal level, two kids, a boy and a girl, if possible. Two girls, two boys, doesn't matter. You know, twin. I mean, I want two kids. I want them to be happy and healthy, and I want to be present. And I want to have enough energy for them. So staying fit, staying longevity is very important to me. So all my friends around me are like crazy biotech longevity geniuses, scientists, like next level guys. So, and I didn't, it wasn't like premeditated, it just happens to be the universe brought them into my life. And now we're talking, how do we live longer? I'm about to turn 50, you know, in a couple of months. And I feel better than I've ever felt in my life. And I guess not because physically I'm stronger, but I think because mentally and emotionally, that breathes into my physicality, my relationships. And having an amazing woman to be there, supportive, and you can count on, and she knows she can count on you. And the support group we have around us, it's incredible. So I see myself really going to like soccer practice, swim lessons, tennis practice, taking amazing trips with my family, laughing, eating, drinking, having the people I'm close with around me, my family. Hopefully my sister, my niece will want to babysit once or twice. So I can go time with my lady. And then for work, I think for professionally, I think I want to still consult for hospitality projects. I have a lot of experience. I know what not to do and what to do.
Right.
Still learning. So I'm already getting really amazing consultation gigs and advisory roles and a lot of projects. I still like to invest in things that I believe in, that I can bring value in, that I understand. And the more I can understand and the more I can build things that are different than what is currently in the portfolio, I'm able to lend more value and bring more value to my family and to have the quality of life that I want. And Eros, I can see an exit coming in 2 years, 2-3 years. But not fully. I don't want to leave the company completely. I want to sell a nice piece of it, take some chips off the table, reinvest that into my happiness and my family and my personal life. And then for Savor, I like to see that get to a place where my investors are going to be like, okay, we didn't think he can do it, but he did it. And for me, I want to always not prove people wrong, because that's not, it sounds a bit negative. I think I want to also challenge myself and prove myself wrong.
Right.
You never thought you can do this. You stepped outside your comfort zone. So those are things. And I think when those things happen, and they're all going to, like, again, bringing all the departments together, that they go towards a mutual goal, and they serve each other, and there's a synergistic relationship there. That's where I see myself in 5 years. Right. Maybe sooner.
I love that. Maybe sooner. I think that's a fantastic stopping point. Thank you for just spending your time with us today, talking about the more difficult subject matters in the world, and you know what, just showing up authentically. I will see you somewhere around the world. Until next time, Ronnie, thanks again.